It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
5 o'clock hour. Alex White, Cofield. We're going to talk to Miles Simmons. Pro Football Talk in just a couple of minutes. Lots of stories around the NFL. Raiders signings today include Jamal Adams, veteran safety, who's actually not as old as maybe people think he is. Had some monster years early in his career. Last year was just a shell of himself, was very beat up, didn't play a whole lot. So we'll get to that with Miles in just a couple of minutes. So we haven't broken down what Alex thinks and if she's betting some futures when it comes to Big Ten football. Has Team White gotten together, the brain trust, and started to break down this conference if we're moving beyond Oregon, Penn State, and Ohio State?
Not enough yet. It's been a lot of NFL, and then going to get to college here very shortly. But so, short answer, no, unfortunately.
I think it needs a lot of investigation and a lot of research because I think it's going to cannibalize itself. I think there's a chance. Well, one, by the way, you notice I didn't mention Michigan.
Yeah.
Michigan is 8-1 to win the conference, win the title game. 8-1? Seems a little rich.
Just because of the program?
Well, because they're breaking in a new quarterback. And while I like their options at quarterback, there is no guarantee that their true freshman is ready to go right out of the gates. Let's also admit, last year they did have success, but you're also working with a roster that still had a lot of Jim Harbaugh players.
Yeah.
So as this becomes more of Sherrone Moore's program, is it really going to stay at the same level?
Like you said, we got to really dive into it because really I want to look at the defensive side, right? Because that is how they did find success last year. So.
Yep. Okay, futures in the NFL. We mentioned the story earlier, but we need to hit it again. Jerry Jones yesterday, talking like Jerry Jones. Is he going to break the team in half? No. It just creates this thought that the culture just ain't that great. I think we know why they hired Brian Schottenheimer. He's a kind of a Jones, your typical Jones coach, where Jerry still gets to be around, still gets to talk a lot, still gets to have a lot of input, and it's, yeah, boss, yeah, boss, yeah, boss. I don't like hearing him mess with the players. You know, Dak's already under contract, and he's cutting him on, you know, at the knees. He's doing it with Micah Parsons. I mean, fact is that this team opened with an 8.5 win total. How often do you see an adjustment with really no significant injury all the way down a win? Are they 7.5 in most places that you've seen?
I've seen a lot of eights, too. So 7.5 or just a flat 8.
ESPN bet has 7.5, according to ESPN.com. I mean, is this one of the 5 worst teams in the NFL? They haven't had a win total this year since 2000, or this low since 2003.
5 worst? Actually, I should just pull up. I have them in order here. But
right?
The tough thing is, Steve, they play of course, their own division, and then the NFC North. And then I believe it is the AFC. Yeah, it is the AFC West, who we are about being one of the most competitive divisions coming into this year with all these great coaches now. So it's a brutal schedule for them.
The run game is very questionable.
And stopping the run still, yeah.
And stopping the run. I believe in certain quarterbacks, you know, to take you to a certain level, but Dak's a little bit older. I'm not writing him off. He's got weapons, we know that, but can he overcome all of these perceived weaknesses that have developed over the last year?
Ooh. It's going to be hard, and I agree. The run game has been the issue for the last 2 years now.
Right.
And still,
they had a guy, Enrico Dowdle, who went out last year in the second half and rushed for like 675, rushed for over 1,000. It's like, okay, wow, they really mined the market here, and they got the job done, and they have someone who could at least be maybe 75% bell cow, and they're like, nah, you can leave. Yep. So we're going to go with Javonte Williams, who's never healthy, Miles Sanders, who hasn't been productive, except for playing behind the Eagles' offensive line, which is unbelievably awesome, and then the rookie out of Texas. So it's disappointing. Again, if I'm a Cowboys fan, I'm not happy. If I'm a bettor, I don't see that I can back this team. Miles Simmons is in Pro Football Talk here on a Tuesday. We're going to talk a lot of Cowboys because they're the Cowboys and people care and they still have a big fan base. I mean, I guess we can make sense of what happened yesterday with Jerry Jones taking shots at his two-star players, two of his three-star players. And, hey, I paid a lot of money, but, you know, they're not out there playing. Like, what? Why is that even necessary? I saw a great line. I forget which media member said it. And the media member said, if you could offer Jerry Jones, you know, three straight years of making a Super Bowl, winning a couple of them, but he can't do press conferences anymore, he'd be like, hard pass. No, I got to do press conferences. Okay, Jer.
Yeah, he probably would. I mean, that's what's going to be so interesting, and I don't need to, you know, do ads for Netflix, but, like, about this Netflix documentary, like, how much is it going to focus on him, and what exactly is he going to say in this thing? Because he really is liable to say anything and everything. And, look, I don't think that it is a good business practice, I'll put it that way, to continue to kind of, like, bleep around with contracts that are for your star players. Like, why did you do this with CeeDee Lamb last year, you know, where he doesn't get off to the best start because he wasn't in training camp? And football training camp is important, all right? Like, it really is important to get into football shape, to just be there. I don't have any problem with, you know, dudes not playing in preseason games. Like, that is what it is. But just the simple act of going out every single day and practicing, it makes a difference. And now you're doing the same stuff with Micah Parsons here. Micah Parsons is a dude that you knew you were going to pay a lot of money to, basically from like week four of his rookie year, right? So the way to deal with that, and this is what the good organizations do. You look at the Eagles, they do it all the freaking time. After year three, you pay this person and you don't bleep around with it. Because the only thing that's going to happen is the price of the brick is going to continue to go up and up and up and up and up. And what have we seen this offseason for star edge rushers in this league? Max Crosby gets a new deal in March. Miles Garrett also gets a new deal, right? $40 million a year AAV for an edge rusher. TJ Watt now, last week, gets a new deal. It's 41 point whatever million AAV. And so now Micah Parsons is set to make $42 million a year when in theory you could have been paying him 35, maybe 32. I don't know. But it never would have gotten to this point if you just taken care of your business last offseason as you should have. So, like, that's the thing that is just so baffling to me with Jerry Jones. And I get that, like, you know, yeah, Dak Prescott's been hurt a little bit in the last few years, and I guess a little bit is kind of an understatement with that. Fine. But he's still a quarterback, and it's still a player that you pay. And it's another guy where, you know, you messed around with the contract, and then, oh, by the way, you got to shell out a whole bunch of money. It's a team construction thing. And that's where I get frustrated, where you see teams that they make sense, right, in their team construction. They go after offensive linemen. If something is a hole, you can see it. Everybody can see it. They're like, yeah, let's plug that. And then you have other teams like the Cowboys, like the Bengals, you know, where they just aren't doing the team construction right. And what they're doing doesn't make sense. So, like, that's just where I get frustrated. Because it's not easy to put together a football team, but you can at least do it in such a manner that makes sense.
Alex, are there markets to go head-to-head wins between two teams? Like, if I wanted to bet the Giants to win more games than the Cowboys, can you bet that?
Not that I've seen.
I mean, obviously, I'd get a nice plus because one team's at 8, 7.5, and the Giants are at 5.5. Miles, tell me I'm crazy. I don't think the Giants will be terrible. I think they're max motivated, at least on the sidelines. In my mind, Brian Daboll is a much better head coach than Brian Schottenheimer. And the quarterback mix, hey, you know what? They have so many guys there. If someone plays poorly and it doesn't work, then you move on to the next guy. Eventually, Jackson Dart's going to play. But I like the fact that Dable's like, I got to fight for my freaking job here. And they may fire him anyway, even if he wins seven games. But he's got to put something on the resume because I think he's an NFL head coach. If the Giants screw this up, he should get a job somewhere else. All right, Giants head-to-head against Cowboys for season wins.
I can definitely see the Giants winning more games. And, I mean, look, if you're talking head coach, like, who do I trust more? I mean, yes, it's Brian Daboll. Brian Daboll's been hamstrung with the fact that he has Daniel freaking Jones as his quarterback over the last couple years. And Daniel Jones now is about to be the starting quarterback of the Colts over Anthony Richardson. So what does that tell you about another GM and what he did selecting Anthony Richardson at number 4 overall? But that's not necessarily what you asked me about, okay? But I think the Cowboys... I mean, if you believe Brian Schottenheimer, who said recently to Mike Silver that of The Athletic that, you know, he was Sean McVay before Sean McVay, and, like, that's interesting. But you know, I think that if he were Sean McVay, and I read this story today, it's like, oh, he had an opportunity to go to the Dolphins, and then he had an opportunity to go to the Bills. Well, Sean McVay took the team that hadn't been a winner and took the job, right? And then he goes and he wins. And Sean McVay also wasn't just, you know, like ground and pound and all that stuff with Mark Sanchez. But it, regardless, yeah, I think you're right, Steve. Like, they have some pieces there when you're talking about the New York Football Giants, whether it's on defense or, you know, with guys like Thibodeau, guys like Brian Burns, on offense now with Malik Nabers and somebody who can throw a deep ball, right? You know, and in Russell Wilson, Jabu Wins, Jameis Winston, he's another guy that can like throw it deep. I mean, it's 50-50 whether or not it's going to be intercepted or not, but like, he can at least get you the ball. Look, Jerry Jeudy went over 1,000 yards for the first time because Jameis Winston started throwing him the football. And Jackson Dart will see what happens. I think in Brian Daboll's mind, in a perfect world, they are, you know, a 10-ish win team, and maybe they sneak into the playoffs in the back door, and you can sit Jackson Dart, you know, the entire season, and then they go to him next year. I don't necessarily think that's going to happen, but I think that, you know, if things fall perfectly for the New York Giants, then yeah, that's something that could be on the table. But like, they're to me anywhere from like a 6 to 10 win team. And I don't necessarily know which way it's going to go. But like, I believe in Brian Daboll, at least as an offensive guy and as a play caller. I do.
Miles Simmons on Cofield and Company Pro Football Talk. Alex White is here as well. We're going to get to some college football because I'm actually hanging out right now at Mandalay Bay for Big Ten Football Media Days. One person nice. You did not mention about the Giants throwing the deep ball, I think this was real. Did you not see Jackson Dart throwing to a moving jet ski?
I did not see this.
Oh, you
wow.
See this.
Good for him.
Well, the reason I need you to see it now is, and I really should lean on you because you're one of the very many voices of reasons on the show, unless we get you on like what's Cleveland proper and the stadium is moving out of the city, then you freaking melt down. Or if someone takes a shot like Sophie Cunningham at Cleveland and then all hell breaks loose. I don't know what's real anymore and not real with AI. I've one of my new, and this is mean, I've seen some gorillas interviewing heavy set women at gyms and making jokes, and I'm like, I think this might be real. It's like it's
or, okay. Actually, Charles Barkley was it happening in San Antonio?
I think one of them. Well, one of them is actually a Bigfoot. I think it's Bigfoot Adventures.
Oh
so,
my lord!
I think it's real.
That's
I don't know.
Well, okay. That's
I don't know anymore. I don't know what's real.
That doesn't sound
is
like a
show
website
real?
I should go to. That doesn't sound like a website I should go to on my work computer.
Well, it's not dirty. I mean, it's not something I think you want to show like female coworkers who might be a little heavy set. That's not going to work. Max Crosby.
Right.
On exactly. I move on. We don't even
Thank
have to be
you.
Subtle about it. on the latest episode of his podcast, Max Crosby was talking about Trey Hendrickson, and he was very careful about it. He said it's a team-by-team deal. But in the end, he said, hey, you know what? We'll see how it shakes out. I'm sure he's going to get his bread one way or the other. Is his bread going to come from Mike Brown, or is it the other?
I just – at this point, I don't know because we talk about team construction, right? Okay. You're the Cincinnati Bengals. You have somebody who led the league in sacks with 17 and a half sacks, right, last year in 2024. It's the second year in a row that he's reached 17 and a half sacks. That's really good production. It is. That's more than a sack a game. Barely, but it is, right? Now, the Cincinnati Bengals defense was not very good last year. I mean, at points, it was all right. You know, they fired Lou Anarumo for a reason, okay? And now you've brought in somebody who you think is going to be better in Al Golden at being defensive coordinator. Okay, so what else do you do this offseason? Well, Joe Burrow basically threatened you publicly. And then so what you do is you re-sign T. Higgins. You give Ja'Marr Chase a boatload of money. Both of those things are really good. Also brought back Mike Gesicki. It was another player that Joe Burrow had mentioned and, you know, people we need. But the last person that he was mentioning in people we need was Trey Hendrickson. All right. Again, Trey Hendrickson, really good production, but on a not-so-great defense. So then what do you do when you know you have this situation going on? You go out and draft Shamar Stewart at 17 overall. It's another defensive end. Makes sense, because a lot of times what Cincinnati does is if they've got a player that's going into a contract year, and Trey Hendrickson is going into a contract year, then what they'll do is they'll draft somebody who can like be the backup this year and replace them the next year. They did it with Jesse Bates. They've done it all kinds of different places. It's the way they construct their team. Sometimes it works, other times it doesn't. But the problem is now you've got a guy in Trey Hendrickson who is disgruntled, and disgruntled for a reason, because he's set to make about like 50, somewhere between 15 and 16 million in base salary this year. All right. And now we talk about Max Crosby, right? And I think that Hendrickson is a little bit more comparable to Max Crosby than he is Myles Garrett. And I don't mean that certainly as an insult, but if you're talking about Max Crosby money, because the market is the market, that is less than half of the average annual value of what Max Crosby's going to make. So that's why Trey Hendrickson is ticked off. And I think that makes perfectly good sense, because right now he is said to be extraordinarily underpaid compared to the top of the market. All right. And he is at this point, because he has led the league in sacks, one of the players that should be toward the top of the market. If not, say he's not going to set the market. He's not that kind of guy, right? He's not a surefire first ballot Hall of Famer like a Myles Garrett, TJ Watt. Okay. But he has proven that he should be paid as a premier edge rusher. But then the fact that you've now messed around with Shamar Stewart and say, you know, publicly, whether it's Duke Tobin or Mike Brown, oh, you know, he's gotten some bad advice, basically blasting the agent, when it's you guys that have decided to change the way you do contracts. Right? Like, okay. And he's saying, hey, the last person you guys drafted did not have this esoteric language in his contract. Why are you giving it to me? Don't bleep with me when you think I'm just some pushover. I'm not going to do it. So that's where I'm like, hey, it's got to be at least one or the other, right? If you're going to take this hardline stance with a Shamar Stewart, then you need to pay Trey Hendrickson something. And if you're going to take this kind of hardline stance with Trey Hendrickson, then you need your first round pick to come in there, because you have to have somebody to rush the passer. It should never, ever be both in this situation where you have two guys who are disgruntled for different reasons, but both justifiably so. That's where the Cincinnati Bengals are really, really messing with this, and they are not doing a very good job. And Trey Hendrickson, again, if you're not going to pay him, trade him to somebody who will. And that's where I think Cincinnati just has to pull this plug, because they obviously are not willing to pay Trey Hendrickson what he is owed, right? And he wants more guaranteed money than just in the first year. I think he's earned that. So they need to move on, and they have to be able to get this right, because this is a critical season for them, right? Going off of what they did last year, you need either Shamar Stewart or Trey Hendrickson. I don't think they're going to have both, but they need, the Bengals need to resolve this internally so that they can move on.
Miles Simmons with us from PFT on Cofield and Company. I feel like you could sit down with Mike Brown and just go, bruh. And he would go, what?
Yeah.
You know what? You know what? You do this all the time. I'll give you two more guys that I would love for Miles to sit in front of and go, bruh. You pick your choice here you want to talk about.
Okay.
Luis Ortiz from baseball or Lloyd Howell?
Oh, I got to go Lloyd Howell.
Lloyd Howell's unbelievable.
Luis Ortiz. I mean, like, that's one thing. And, like, don't bet on baseball when you're playing. You jerk. You're betting on yourself. I guess.
About,
hey, Steve, you told me to choose one or the other, and I'm doing both.
I was like, going to say, don't. How about don't bet first pitch of an inning to be a ball and then gun the ball like 48 feet. Like, just miss out of the zone a little bit. Don't whip it into the ground.
Yeah. Are you out of your mind? Of course you're going to get caught. There's way too much technology, you doomba. Yes, it's the NFLPA, but again, still a union. And then you say, yes, I'm going to expense $736 car. What the hell kind of car was he? I mean, it costs that much to get from the airport to the strip club? Where are you going? Did he fly from the airport to the strip club? Did he rent like a golden Maybach? Like, I don't even understand how a car can cost that much to go from the airport to the strip club. But it did, and he expensed that. And not only that, then he expenses a trip to the strip club and like ATM expenses and all this under the guise of like team building. And not only does he do that, but he does it a second time. I just, the sheer audacity, right? The unmitigated gall. To say, yes, not only am I going to go to the strip club at expensive, but I'm going to do it three separate times at two different firms, one of which is a union. That is unbelievable. And what's so great about it, too, is, you know, J.C. Tretter, I think he said this to Jonathan Jones of CBS Sports late last weekend, where he's talking about, oh, you know, the committee wanted 10-1 the other guy, but we didn't say anything. And then Lloyd Howell did like such a great job on his presentation. Well, no crap, Sherlock. He did a great job in his presentation. He was at a consulting firm. He's a consultant. That's what he does. So it's like, man, What a mess this was. And now, like, the players need somebody who's really going to represent them, because this is the kind of guy that you don't really want representing you when owners are trying to get 18 games into the schedule. Right? Can you really trust that guy when his judgment is so poor that he would try to expense a trip to the strip club 3 separate times? Come on, man.
I feel like Lloyd Howell in a position of power may be a little less than objective. It could be compromised. I don't want to bring up the name Brett Kavanaugh, but it could be something like that. The Rams O-line situation, combined with the fact that we're going to have a limited, at least at the beginning of training camp, Matt Stafford with a back. Are we worried?
Yeah, I think it's fair to be concerned. I mean, you know, Sean McVay was saying today that it's year 17 for Matthew Stafford. They were going to, you know, ramp him down in some ways anyway during training camp. And he has so much experience, you know, the age factor. He doesn't probably need to be out there as much as, say, a young guy. And I agree with Sean McVay on that. You know, give him every fourth day off as opposed to him being out there every day. It's the same thing you would probably do with guys like their right tackle, Rob Havenstein. You know, just older guys who have been around the block. They understand what they're doing, and their bodies could probably use that rest. But, I mean, anytime you're talking about a back issue with a quarterback, that's going to make my ears perk up, especially an older quarterback. Because as we've seen with some of these guys, you know, when it goes quickly. And I thought Matthew Stafford played at a very high level last year, particularly down the stretch. You know, he had a really nice game in the postseason against Minnesota with the game they played in Arizona. And then also, I mean, he played really well against the Eagles, even in the snow, right? I mean, this is a guy that's played in a dome and then in a warm weather climate his whole career, and he still was able to do a lot of things and give the Eagles basically all they could handle in the snow there for the NFC divisional round. So I think it is a concern. I mean, but Matthew Stafford's a guy that, you know, he's been carrying the load for offenses for 17 years, right? So I guess this does make a little bit of sense that his back would be hurt. But it's just, it's something where if he's not practicing after this first 5-day stint, then that's when you really start to worry. If he does get on the field, then you're like, okay, I guess this is what they say it is.
To close, I'm going to put you both on the griddle. And this is a little bit tough because it means you'd have to have a general idea of how Big Ten teams are going to do. At William Hill in town, you can bet NFL teams head-to-head regular season wins against Big Ten teams, college football teams in general. But I have some Big Ten choices here.
Hmm.
How are the Chiefs going to be, Alex? They're laying 1.5 to Ohio State. You know, these are regular season wins. And the Chiefs were 15-2 last year. How much of a drop-off is there? They're laying 1.5.
It's tough. They won so many one-score games last year, right? You would think it would, like, regress back. I also just think that division is so good. I actually think the AFC West is one of the best. So I'd probably take the 1.5.
Okay. Miles, will you lay 1.5 wins with a league that plays 17 regular season games?
No, I will not, because I think Ryan Day is not going to be as good this year, right? Because, I mean, this is the Ohio in me, right?
He
like,
left.
I mean,
he left.
This is it was right there.
No, he went. No, he's been gone. Believe me, he's been gone for about 8 hours.
Oh,
he made a brief appearance. Yeah,
that was very, very funny. Actually, I kind of didn't get what you were saying there for the first. Yeah. No, I mean, like, I give credit to Ryan Day for, you know, doing what he did last year, winning the national championship game, but he still needs to beat Michigan. And, you know, I think that would be very nice to do a little bit consistently, because that's what I grew up with. So let's get there first, Ryan Day. Maybe I'll pick you to have more wins than Patrick Mahomes.
You've had another week to play. What is it? Is it Dynasty mode on your college football game?
That's right.
Can you move on from to a new position in a week, or does it take longer than that?
Well, I could have, but Steve, you know, sometimes you just want to stay where you're at and then increase the offers, because right now, you know, we're here at Clemson as offensive coordinator under, and get this, head coach Lane Kiffin, who was hired after Dabo Swinney took his talents to Alabama after Kalen DeBoer couldn't get it done. So, yeah, but you know what happened, Steve? I mean, we went 16-0 last year, man. I brought the transfer quarterback over from Colorado. We had ourselves a grand old time. It was great. 16-0 national champions, Lane Kiffin at Clemson. So
I feel like you're being pigeonholed here. When's the head coaching opportunity coming?
The unfortunate thing, you know, the head coaching opportunities just weren't what we would hope that they would be, you know, and I guess my level just isn't good enough. And so that's why we got to keep increasing the level. Right now we're at 31. Maybe that will get us someplace, you know, with a good job in the Big Ten. That's all I'm looking for. Big Ten, you know, maybe a smaller school with the SEC, somewhere else in the ACC. I mean, I'm talking even going back to the Mountain West as a head coach, depending on what the job is. Wow. So we just want the right opportunity, you know.
Team Simmons. Not as toxic to speak about as referencing Team Clark. Don't ever do that again. Anyone in the WNBA, don't ever mention Clark again. Because if it's misunderstood, you are the enemy of the people. So poor Kelsey Plum in your town, she has taken a beating.
Yeah, definitely.
Good.
I know.
Starting to look ahead to PFT's fall schedule, what are we starting to roll out here consistently in August on Peacock?
Well, one of the things that Mike Fleury has been doing pretty much every day is he's doing a PFT PM. And a lot of these lately have been focused on what's going on in the NFLPA. And so, you know, it's kind of a joint venture that we got going between PFT and Pablo Torre finds out. There's a conversation published today between Florio and Pablo Torre that kind of delves into a lot of the nitty gritty of what's been going on with the Lloyd Howe, with J.C. Treader and all these and the reporting that they've been able to do. So you can check that out on Peacock and also on the NFL and NBC YouTube page. Good conversation.
I like that a lot. I like bringing in Pablo. I feel like there's some respect for investigative reporting, which is kind of dissipating because people aren't allowed to do their jobs anymore.
This is true. This is true. But not here. Not at PFT.
Miles, we appreciate it, man. Thank you.
All right. Take care, guys.
There he is, Miles Simmons. Thanks again to the Big Ten for having us out here. We're going to be out here the next 2 days, live show for sure on Thursday. We'll be down here getting interviews on Wednesday as well. We'll send it back to the studio. We come back, Alex White and Cofield will get back into what's happened around the National Football League, but especially with the Raiders, because Pete Carroll had some pretty ballsy words today. He's coming out of the gates blazing.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Alex in studio, Cofield here at Mandalay Bay, first of three Big Ten football media. Today was Ohio State Day, so Ryan Day spoke briefly, hit a couple of media spots. Let's see, Rutgers, Nebraska, Illinois, Indiana, and now I just blanked on the last one. They split it up, so you got a lot of the West Coast contingent the next 2 days, Alex. Today was also a focal point for Tony Petitti, the Big Ten commissioner. I want to play some of the comments he had about the auto bids, the idea of auto bids into the tournament. I do have to mention, so we've hit it a couple times, people are looking for that storyline of the team in the Big Ten that will surprise people, like Indiana did a year ago with Kirk Cignetti, and they had a favorable schedule, and you know, they did what they needed to do to get in. Who can be that team this year? So Illinois has been the hot selection. It is interesting when you get to talk to the coaches, and I'm not on the beat in the Big Ten. Like, people wouldn't know about the connections that Dan Mullen has made already, money connections in Vegas, right? And we had Mullen on last week at Mountain West Conference Football Media Days, and Mullen, he's really smart because I was talking about pitching wealthy people for money, and we're at Circa, and he immediately goes into a story about a conversation with Derek Stevens. Right?
Right.
Thinking.
Yep.
I did not know that Shad Khan, Jaguars owner, has his Illinois connections. In fact, their plane, the Jaguars plane, was the plane that took Illinois out here to Vegas.
Wow.
So I'm sure they're getting some donations, and I'm sure Brett Bielema would like to get more, but that's part of the whole game now.
Interesting. And of course, they do have an experienced quarterback with Luke Altmaier, so that doesn't hurt either.
And by the way, retention is key.
Yep.
Not only is getting players in the portal, but keeping them out of it. So retention is key, so I'm sure their money backers are throwing in more money to the program than ever, and that's what happens when you win, right? There hasn't been enthusiasm, very much of it. There's been loyalty. There's been some really good partners over the years for UNLV football and basketball, but to get that next level money and keep up with the Joneses, and keeping up in the Big Ten is different than keeping up in the Mountain West Conference. Keeping up with the Mountain West Conference is trying to get to, say, $4 or $5 million for the football program. Keeping up in the Big Ten might mean you have to, you know, on the books, get to $15 million.
Right.
So the fact that Shad Khan is in the fold and lending his plane and probably putting a pretty penny into the program is a good thing. No one here is going to cry in their beer for the Big Ten, although they're gonna make the case, and I thought they made a pretty decent case, and we started to get into this whole auto bid thing. There's two plans that could be considered right now for the field of 16, if that comes up in a couple of years. Five auto bids overall, all the conference champions, well, for the Power Four, and then one group of five. Keep in mind, in a couple of years, another group of five conference, it's going to really be group of six, the Pac-12.
Right.
So it's going to be even harder competition-wise, and especially at the top. You may have a bunch of teams that go 10-2 or 11-1, and they're all going to be considered for that bid. Big Ten and the SEC and maybe even the other conferences, the other Power Four, want to consider this play-in situation. So listen to Tony Petitti here. I thought this was a really interesting framing of the question from Stu Mandel, who is a Northwestern guy, and he floated out this question that, hey, you know what? Fans overwhelmingly don't like the four auto bids. And Petitti started to go into the answer like, wait, what poll says fans don't want this? Where is your information coming from?
Well, first, I'll take issue with the way you're phrasing that. I don't really know. I'm not aware of massive studies with real research that have demonstrated that.
It's not a scientific poll, but a poll I put on Twitter this morning, it was 76% for 5 plus 11, 24% for the plan you guys want.
Look, I think, you know, we feel pretty strongly that fans will really gravitate to a play-in weekend. That, you know, providing games that are do or die on the field will drive fan interest. Whether there's enough information that fans have in any one poll about what a new system will be, you know, I'm not aware of how it was phrased or not. I just believe, and I'm talking to our league, you know, the weekend that we're talking about where you'd have championship games and across all conferences, meaningful play-in games, I don't see how that's a bad thing for college football. And I think fans will gravitate to it.
Stuart Mandel's a pretty decent reporter, but that was one of the more ridiculous moments I've witnessed at a press conference. And the fact that Petitti didn't just start, he was actually very nice. He should have just started laughing for like a minute.
Yeah.
Like your Twitter poll? Well, it's not scientific. No, it's not. I don't know what fans support. I know this. I do think that the Big Ten should have been out beating the drum for this because you follow college football, Alex, a lot. And you bet a lot of college football.
Right.
And you haven't really heard about this 4+4 thing. They should have been out in front. But I think here's what happened. Early on, the SEC was the voice behind this. And then as we found out from Nicole Auerbach, and we already knew this, you know, going back now a couple months, that Greg Sankey's tone changed. And now he's like, 5-11, we like that one. And you're like, wait, I thought you wanted the auto bids. And Nicole Auerbach was telling us that it sounds like the coaches got together during the SEC meetings and were like, yeah, we don't like that. And they're actually going to listen to the coaches. So now the Big Ten's in a position, because I really believe they're behind this. This is really what they want for the conference, this four auto bid thing for the SEC and the Big Ten. Now the Big Ten's going to have to be the bad guy. And that's not an easy role to be in.
It kind of makes sense, right? I think the SEC's more likely to already get four in without having this automatic. The Big Ten is trying to get them on their side. Like, both of us need this, right? Big Ten and SEC will have four every single year. But really, the SEC's like, no, we're good. We believe in the talent that we have at the top, and it'll all work itself out. So, interesting.
Now, I could be falling victim to a wrestling work here. And the SEC is just like, yeah, we're going to back off a little bit because everything we want to do, no one wants to support. And maybe they'll be more open to listening to the Big Ten approach.
Maybe. That's true.
But I think you are right in a lot of ways that the way the SEC looks at it, like, we don't need four auto bids. We know we're going to get four every year because the machine that covers college football so backs the SEC and storylines and puts up this, you know, puts out this nonsense about their strength of schedule, and it just means more. And, you know, as we pointed out a while ago, the SEC's information is all based on what's happened the last 20 years. Yeah, well, it was already a slanted system. So you benefited from a slanted system.
Yep.
Well, based on what's happened recently, yeah, that was slanted.
Yeah.
The system's completely different now, and the fact that we now have rosters changing to the tune of 30 to 60 players every year, nothing that's happened before this matters. Ooh. We're paving a whole new world. So here's true. Pettitte getting into sort of coach job. Here's Pettitte getting more into his reasons for auto bids, which I thought he basically called the college football playoff committee onto the carpet. And he's like, we want them to do less. We want them to be less subjective. We don't want their input as much. Let's just lock this in.
I think it's been a really hard thing to do for a long time. I mean, you go back to going back to the BCS and deciding who the two teams are and then going back through the 14 playoff. It hasn't been easy. And I think I'm not going to comment on the last couple of seasons, but I think there are a lot of places who think it's also, teams not getting consideration. I just think there's a lot of that. So the idea that I'm not going to point to any one, school, whether it's in our league or outside our league, you can go back and look at the reaction when the rankings come out and who's invited and see all that yourself. But at the end of the day, I think there's been, a lot of concern about how those decisions are made. I focus on that piece. How are we differentiating from teams that don't have head-to-head play, teams that don't play common schedules across leagues that do different things? And I think that's a really hard, tall order. And the point I will make is that every time you think about expansion, I think there's some sort of counter idea that it gets easier to make these decisions. It actually gets harder. More teams look alike. More teams are going to have 9-3 records. More teams are going to struggle in a conference road game. More teams might stumble in a conference home game. And some teams play tougher non-conference schedules. At least, and there's also just the evolution of how you go through the season and how you move across. So I just think that those decisions are really difficult to make. And, I know this has been the system that we've used for a really long time, but I have a hard time believing expanding it that will make these decisions easier.
I thought it was interesting he mentioned in the past that there are teams that have not been considered. When you look at last year's Big Ten standings and try to recall what happened at the end of last year, did you think the Big Ten getting four teams was actually not a fair shake and that teams who should have been considered included Illinois, Iowa, and Michigan? Two of those schools were 6-3. Michigan was 5-4 at 8-5 overall.
No, not last year. Did you?
Right? No.
No.
No. No. And that's where he is fighting a battle on that front, because I think people are way more open to going 6-7 deep in considering the SEC, which, again, I think is a misnomer. It doesn't mean that Illinois or Iowa or Michigan were worse than the teams who finished outside the top four in the SEC. For the SEC, the brand was bigger. Well, Michigan's a big brand. But Alabama was the fifth team. South Carolina was the sixth. Missouri was the seventh. The eighth was A&M, and A&M was kind of in the mix for a while. LSU was the ninth.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was going to say, too, the other one that we aren't talking about this conference, clearly, but in the ACC with Clemson sneaking in there, then it felt like Miami got bumped out.
No consideration at the end. It was basically like play your way in. Even if you had a great season, your loss is way too late in the season. Sorry. Which also brings up something really interesting, because Rhett Lashley, I love when coaches do this because I like outside the box thinking. I don't the whole thing about brands and the SEC is always like we should be considered down to the eighth or ninth team. Why? Because who cares? It's this year. Everyone has a new quarterback every year now. Everyone has a new roster every year. I don't care what you did in 2018 or 2014 or that you won a bunch of national championships when the system was two or four teams. Those systems sucked, all right? And now there's a lot more teams that we'll call it can legally cheat like you guys used to do illegally. Rhett Lashley, the SMU coach, came out freaking guns a-blazing, and he was talking about he wants to go to – because the system – they're talking about, Alex, the Big Ten would like to see is 4+4. So that's four autos to the Big Ten, four autos to the SEC, two to the ACC, two to the Big 12. And so Lashley responds with, well, if we're doing this based on results, this conference, the ACC, which, by the way, they're brand new to. So I love that one. When you move to a new conference, you're like, we're ACC. We are ACC now. We love the history. Right, his plan, he said, he wants to have a 4+4+4+3. Wait, who's the third four? The ACC.
Of course.
How about that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, Lashley said, when it comes to our league, and I'll continue with this, I'll give you the rest of his quote on the way back as we're live here, Big Ten Football Media Days on this Tuesday.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
I know people are waiting on the edge of their seat for more Rhett Lashley SMU quotes, but I'll get to them tomorrow. But anyway, ACC coach with the Mustangs is coming out firing about what people believe is the status quo and these established rules and what each conference should get. I like it. We'll build on that tomorrow. Alex, as we go in the bag here, we got to get some Raiders notes out there.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
How about Pete Carroll? Pete Carroll says today, oh, we got to win a ton. I've been winning 10 games a year for 20 years now. We're going to win a bunch. I don't care who hears that. I wish I could guarantee it. The I wish part has already been chopped off. Pete Carroll guarantees. I've already seen that up on the internets.
I love that flex a little bit because, yeah, you have been a winner in the past, and now you got to bring that to the new organization and give everybody confidence around you. I have them down for nine, so I can find another in there.
Oh, you can?
Yeah, I think so.
Do you want to find another because Pete Carroll just guaranteed it? Did he coax you into this?
Yes.
But factually, do we call Pete out on the carpet here? Factually, his last 6 years, he said, I've been winning 10 games a year for 20 years. Last 6 years, 9 wins, 9 wins, 7, 12, 11, 10. So on average, he's pretty much there. Not great at math, but I'm pretty close there. I think he's like 2 wins short of averaging 10 a year.
Yeah. Pretty good.
I don't see it happening. But I think it'll be a very competitive 8-9 or 9-8, which that is a big improvement from what they were. And there's probably a couple of people who are driven nuts by Pete saying, we got to win a lot. We got to win now. One of them, of course, is fellow company member Adam Hill, who always believes in sort of rebuild mode, but retool so that you can get that quarterback who's the franchise quarterback. But I don't know if that's on the horizon. And guess what? Mark Davis changed everything. He hired someone who's 73 years old. He ain't in the 6-year build.
Yeah, exactly. And he's paying the OC more than some other head coaches are making.
Yes. He stole the OC. What was Chip Kelly making at Ohio State? Like 2? Yeah, not. I like that. The guys from the Fan in Columbus are like, not 6. So that's a move. That's a move. Now, how about this one? I'll come over the top. This guy, MD, spends money. He just landed Kirk Morrison as the color voice on radio, former Raider, as Lincoln Kennedy, I think, is going to reduce his duties a little bit. There is a web-produced show by the Raiders production company called, I think it's Talk of the Nation. They have landed Baron Davis. Baron Davis is going to be a Raiders host. I mean, that's got to be $3 or $4 million right there.
Wow.
You think Baron Davis wants to come in and talk about a 6-win team? Rebuilding a team that's stinking in the draft to try to get Arch Manning?
No, but he's got a good division to talk about. Loaded.
Did you find that extra win? You have him at 9. Can you find that by the time we talk to you next time?
Yes.
Was there a good swing game for the Raiders?
At the end of the season's tough. November 30th through
sweep
January
the Broncos
3rd.
Like they normally do.
Yeah, okay, there it is.
Till last year. Don't laugh, Mateo. Mateo's a Broncos guy. Bo Nix is going to regress.
So it was Mateo who was screaming about how great Bo Nix was a few weeks ago. Okay, and it all makes sense now.
That was some rando at TI who was like, I love that kid's character. I wouldn't trade him for any quarterback in the NFL. I'm like, I would trade him for 14 guys. I don't know what you're talking about. I think Bo Nix is very good, but let's dial it down. Get ready for year 2, brother. It's going to be a learning experience for Bo Nix as defenses adjust. Alex, great job. Thanks for being patient with all the interviews we had down here. Thanks for doing all the work behind the scenes during the show. To Griffin, great setup by Mateo. Thanks to the Big Ten for letting us be out here for day 1. We'll be out here for day 2 and 3. We'll see you.